Hello, everybody. My name is Anne Teato, and welcome to episode 74 of the Psychic Matters podcast. I'm sure you are all wondering, how did you do in the People's Choice Podcast Awards? Well, we didn't win this year, but we were in the final 10 for the second year in a row. So for that, I am eternally grateful. And it does mean we qualify for a trophy this year, which is lovely. Slightly pricey, so I might not buy it. But never mind, don't need a trophy. All nominees in the final slate were asked to make a video of an acceptance speech in case we did win. So I am going to post that on our Psychic Matters Facebook group page, even though we haven't won the award, just so you can see what I would have said if we did win. So do go over to Facebook and join the Psychic Matters Facebook group. And of course, we'll all try again next year. Meanwhile, I've got this beautiful begonia plant in my greenhouse. And as you know, if you've listened to this podcast regularly, I've broken my leg. And so trips to the greenhouse, which is right at the end of my garden, have not been very frequent because frankly, I can't walk. So it's rather hard. But I was up there a couple of days ago and there is an incredible bright red begonia in a pot. It is stunning. The colour of it would just take your breath away. It's this beautiful scarlet red. Stunning. It's blooming away, and here's the thing, there is no one there to admire it. No one will ever see it, only me, if I'm able to hobble to the greenhouse. But the fact that no one admires it is immaterial to that little begonia. It's blooming away anyway. It's fulfilling its purpose anyway. Admiration is not part of its life purpose. It doesn't feel less than if someone doesn't admire it. And it really reminded me the other day, not just of the podcast award, I suppose, but of each of our individual soul journeys. We're not here to impress other people, to be admired or to feel accepted or less than if someone doesn't approve of how we are fulfilling our life's purpose. We just are. We are here to fulfill our own unique soul promise, and other people's admiration or lack of it should never be a reason that we stunt our own progress. So Psychic Matters will continue along its path, and I will continue along mine, and you will continue along yours, because that is what we're all here to do regardless. On to this week's episode, where I'm exploring having conversations around death and dying. My wonderful guest today is Susan Barsky Reed, who modelled an enterprise called the Death Cafe, which she founded in 2011 alongside her wonderful son, John Underwood. As of today, there have been 14,732 death cafes held in 82 different countries. It seems that people across the world are very keen to talk about death, and many have been passionate enough to organise their own death cafe. Susan's son, John, died suddenly on June 27th, 2017, and the Death Cafe is now run by Susan Barsky Reed, John's mother, and his sister, Jules Barsky, assisted by two very talented individuals, Lizzie Miles, who ran the first Death Cafe in the US, and Megan Mooney, who runs the Death Cafe Facebook page. And I had the great good fortune to meet Susan's incredible son, John, many years ago when I interviewed him for my award-winning documentary series Life at Death's Door, which at the time was narrated by celebrated British actor Brian Blessed, OBE, and BAFTA award winner Joe Brand. And Life at Death's Door was a series that I wrote to explore some of the incredible ways we can commemorate our dead and find out how we can conduct our own unique funeral celebrations to better reflect the lives our loved ones have lived. I'll include a link to it in the show notes for this episode on my website under the podcast tab. If you would like to listen to it, I'll include the URL. And Susan has very kindly given me permission to include some of John's words from that original interview later in this podcast episode. So settle back in your chairs, reach for a comfortable pillow to put behind your head or the small of your back, and I really hope you enjoy the insights that this episode may bring you. We have a wonderful guest in the studio this week who is here to support and encourage us to have honest conversations around death and dying. Susan Barsky-Reed, welcome to Psychic Matters.
Thank you. Very nice to be here.
It's lovely to have you here today, Susan, and thank you for making the time to talk to everybody today. And I know that you set up and founded, along with your son, John, an organization called the Death Cafe. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about how that came to be and what happens at a death cafe.
Of course. John, my son, was a devout Buddhist. And apparently, if you're a devout Buddhist, you have to contemplate death every day. So this led him to decide that he needed to do some work around death and dying. He was working in the town planning department of Tower Hamlets Council. Had, you know, quite a good, well-paid job. My husband, Alistair, found an article in the Independent newspaper about a man called Bernard Cretaz, who's a Swiss sociologist, who had started something called Café Mortel, which was a discussion in pubs or bars in Switzerland around death and dying. And I was to cut this out and sent it to John. And John decided that's what I want to do. So he patented the name Death Café, eventually left his job and concentrated on developing Death Café. Death Café is a group of people who meet and talk about death and dying. There's no agenda. The agenda comes from whatever the group want to talk about. When we first started, I facilitated the first Death Café for him in September 2011 in his kitchen in Hackney. We did have an agenda. John had worked out a very strict agenda that it was going to last for 2 hours. He was the waiter. He made the food and distributed the food. And I did the talking. And he had a series of tasks that we were going to ask people to do. And I can't remember anymore what these tasks were, unfortunately. But it was a very strict group of things that people were asked to do. I can remember we asked people, he had an open fire. We asked people to burn these pieces of paper, maybe with things that they didn't like. I can't actually remember. After we'd done a couple of death cafes, we decided there was no need at all for any of these things because people were very keen to actually talk about death and dying. Once they got started, all you need to do at a death cafe is ask people why they've come, who they are and why they've come. And it goes on from there.
And what sort of people come to these events, Susan?
Females. It must be at least 75% females who come, of all ages and types. I don't think you can really specify. We have some death cafes nowadays that are targeted for different groups of people. We've had some for people who want to talk about the death of an animal. We've had death cafes that are for LGBTQ plus people. I think we've had one for people who have changed their gender. We've had ones for homeless people. But mostly, they're just put on the Death Cafe website and people have a look at there being one in their area and they decide to come along for whatever reason.
And what sort of things do they bring with them? When they arrive, what sort of topics do they want to talk about or have been spoken about that you can remember or stick in your mind?
Just so many different things. People's experience of the death of a loved one or the dying of a loved one. Advanced directive planning for death. So that's something that comes up quite often. Euthanasia comes up. Suicide can come up. And what's so interesting is that it's not always gloomy or sorrowful. There's lots of laughter. There are funny things that happen around death and dying that people bring to death cafes. So you may very well have a group that laughs a lot rather than weeps, or you can do both within the space of time. It's usually an hour and a half to 2 hours, occasionally shorter.
Yeah, I think that's ever so interesting, the fact that they can be lighthearted and that people can enjoy this experience as well. It doesn't have to be all doom and gloom, like you say.
It feels, after a death cafe, I've usually felt uplifted. It's just a wonderful experience, something that for that short time, people can become really intimate, even though they're strangers, and talk about things that you've never talked to a stranger about, or to people that you're close to.
And so if somebody was coming and they were talking about suicide or contemplating suicide, they might voice and vocalise those thoughts, those feelings. And then how does that get held within the space of people?
That's a hard question to answer. I think people are just, one of the things we do at the beginning is ask people to respect other people's views, even though they may be different to their own. And the death cafes that I've been to, that certainly always happened. It doesn't always happen. There are some people who, I can't remember the technical name, who'll come into Zooms, particularly when they were all on Zoom during lockdown, and are they called Zoom bombers or something, who will come in and be rude.
Yes.
And that can happen, but I'm glad to say it hasn't happened to me.
Yeah, I understand that. That's happened to me on one of my mediumship hours where somebody came in. It was quite disconcerting, but we got rid of them very quickly. So it provides a space then, Susan. So if somebody was to come with a deep feeling, I mean, I've chosen suicide out of all the wonderful things that you said people come for. I've just chosen suicide out of the air. But so if they did, they vocalise their feelings, and it's just a space for your own feelings and opinions to be expressed and then invite other people to comment on, I guess, where there is nothing like that. We can't really talk in that way with our friends and family, can we?
It's not common to have the ones where I have facilitated. Suicide has come up not as people being suicidal, but people having experienced the suicide of loved ones, or, you know, and one person at a death cafe once was a Samaritan volunteer and listened to people who were talking about suicide. There are some death cafes that say we will not discuss suicide at this death cafe.
I think that's very interesting as well. So I'm just thinking, if I've never been to a death cafe. I can't believe I've never actually been to one, and I'm sure that I would really, really enjoy it. But
yeah.
I also feel if I went, people that listen to this podcast know that I lost my brother about 18 months ago, and it was very difficult. He had a brain tumour, and we watched him decline over the course of 12 months. It was a brutal, brutal illness. And if I went to a death cafe, maybe I'd like to speak about my experience of death. But even just talking to you here on this podcast, I can feel the emotion beginning to well up in me behind my eyes, almost like I can feel it now that my throat is choking. How can I get over that? If I go to a death cafe, how can I then speak? How is that possible? I think I would find it very hard.
Well, I think the way that I do it, because as you know, John died 5 years ago, and when I speak about him, I can feel the same as you feel about your brother. And you think, I'm feeling saddened. Of course I am, because somebody I love very much died, and I can talk about it. It's, I think, accepting that it's natural, isn't it, for us to be sad when somebody we love dies.
It is, and it's nice to have a space, because even though I would feel like that, I know once I started talking, there would be a certain relief, because I think in life, and I don't know if you found this, Susan, with the death of your son, John, that there seems to be, we don't talk about it after a while. It's done, they're buried, they're done, and we no longer speak of it. And yet we carry it so strongly in our hearts all the time.
Yeah.
And so how beautiful that you've created a space that people can go and express their feelings in this way and be held by other people and just have a space to talk. I think it's beautiful.
Thank you.
So is there a venue called the Death Cafe, or where is the Death Cafe held?
Well, John was hoping that there was going to be a venue called the Death Cafe. And he was hoping to open the real Death Cafe and try to get enough money for that to happen, but didn't succeed, sadly. Just a couple of months before he died. So a death cafe can be anywhere. It can be in a Zoom room. It can be in a cafe. It can be in your home. The last one I did was in my synagogue, in the library of the synagogue. It can be any, and lots of libraries actually seem to be holding them, which is a really good idea, a really good use of the library.
Yeah, it's a beautiful use of the library. And so is there a facilitator at each death cafe, Susan?
Yeah, there's a facilitator at each death cafe, and their job is just to help people to keep on topic, try and stop people dominating a conversation if they can. It's not always an easy thing to do that, because some people really need to speak and to just be there to help people. It's not to bring up topics. There is a misconception amongst quite a few people that the facilitator should have a list of things that they think people should talk about. And in fact, that's entirely not right. What is right is that the topics come from the people who are attending the Death Cafe, the participants, and the facilitator should be helping the participants to bring forward their thoughts and feelings.
And so the facilitator, if they came to me, say, for instance, and I'm at the Death Cafe with my feelings on my brother, they may encourage me to have a space to talk if I wanted to, invited but not forced?
Yes. Well, it's interesting that, because I look through all the Death Cafes listed on the site, one of the things I do is to go through them and make sure they follow the guidelines. And quite a few people say it's fine to attend and not to speak. I think John actually thought that he was quite good at encouraging people to speak, and if they were silent, he would get them to speak, whereas I would be happy for people to remain silent if they wanted to.
See, I like that. I like the ability to go, to know that you may just be an observer of that which goes on at that particular time in that particular death cafe. That's a lovely option for people as well, I feel.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. As a psychotherapist, I've run groups, and if people can participate without speaking.
Yeah, absolutely. And what's the feedback like from people who have attended death cafes over the years since they've been going? What are people saying about their experience of going?
How surprised they were that it could be lighthearted, how they enjoyed it and felt so much better when they left than when they arrived. The feedback is overwhelmingly positive. And I mean, it continues to grow. There've been 14,000, over 14,000 death cafes in 82 different countries. It's incredible. And I think that's a testament to what a good idea it is.
That is absolutely incredible. And that's since 2011 when it started?
Yeah.
What an incredible achievement. You must feel very proud of that, because you were there at the very first one, of course, and was it your son who decided to set this up, or was it both of you together?
It was John who decided to set it up, and I wanted to be in on it. So I said, can I facilitate the first one? And he was very happy for me to do that. And we did quite a few together, which was such a lovely experience.
It's incredible. And what sort of ages go? Do children go to these? Do people bring their children along? Is there a wide age range of people?
I've not ever been to one where there's been children. I think probably there could be mileage in having a deck for children, but I don't think anybody's ever done that. Some facilitators say for over 18s. I don't think I would do that, but so far no children have ever. But I think it's a good idea for children to appreciate that we die and that's okay, that's what happens. Because the taboo about talking about death and dying can be very frightening, I think, for children rather than having it out in the open. Where it should be accepted, shouldn't it?
Yes, yeah.
And it happens to all of us.
Because years ago, death was very present in societies. You know, if you lived in a village and somebody died, you'd file into their house, you'd view the body, you'd be part of that death process. Whereas now it's very sanitary. People are dying behind closed doors, the body's gone, nobody goes to view the body, blah, blah, blah. So death has been removed from the society in one sense, I feel.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I know that my parents would protect me. You know, I didn't go to the funerals of my grandparents because children didn't do that. And I can remember going to a funeral when I was an adult. It was my aunt died and she had grandchildren and there were children there who were sad. And my parents saying they shouldn't be here. And I was thinking, of course they should, and of course they're sad because their grandma's died. And that's actually okay and right.
Yeah, yeah, I love that story. So how often would death cafes be held, Susan? Is it a regular monthly thing or is it on occasion? How does that work?
However you want it to. Some facilitators run them, I don't know, the first Tuesday of every month. You know, every other month. I do occasional ones. I haven't ever got into the habit of doing them regularly. But some people seem to have a group who will go to every one. A group who will go to, you know, to every death cafe once a month. I've never felt the need to do that personally, but some facilitators really like to do it.
Yeah, interesting. It just depends on the person's need or the need of the people, doesn't it? I think it's fascinating. And how does a death cafe close? Once everybody's had their discussion, they've had their tea, they've enjoyed their cake, how do we bring it to a conclusion and a close?
Well, John used to play a piece of Japanese music. I haven't done that since he died because every time I used to run a death cafe, I used to text him and say, can you send me that piece of music, please? And I don't know where it is. I could look through and maybe see it. Just sometimes with a contemplation and thoughts about how we're going to make the most of our lives because we're all going to die.
I think that's really uplifting, isn't it? What are we going to do as we step out of this death cafe and we step forward into the present moment, which is all we ever have? How can we make the most of that? I think that is really powerful. Thank you. And if somebody who's listening to this podcast, Susan, wants to attend a death cafe, where would they find out if there's one in their area?
Go to www.deathcafe.com. and find a death cafe near them. And there's always now the option of going to one online. That has been the benefit, one of the few benefits of lockdown, is that all the death cafes were online, and you found that instead of just having local people at your death cafe, you had people, an international group of people, which was quite exciting and brought a whole new dimension to it. They've mostly gone back to face-to-face death cafes now, local ones, but there are still quite a few that are online. So you shouldn't be worried if there isn't one near you.
That's so brilliant. So anyone with an internet connection anywhere in the world can bring their own cup of tea and their own slice of cake and sit in front of their computer with people from across the globe to speak about death, dying, and how to make, I think one of your objectives is how to, or to encourage people to make the most of their finite lifetime.
Those are John's words.
Right. Yeah. Wonderful.
Yeah. And you can see John talking quite a lot about Death Cafe on YouTube if people are interested.
Do you have a YouTube channel for that specifically, Susan?
I don't think so. I'm not very techie, so.
That's all right. I'm sure if we all go to YouTube and type in John, J-O-N, yeah, Underwood, then we will find John Underwood Death Cafe. Then we'll see John talking about his, yeah, his legacy, really. Did he speak when he was passing away, Susan? Did he speak of his work at the Death Cafe? Was it mentioned?
No, he had a brain hemorrhage.
I'm so sorry.
So he 1 minute he was there and then he wasn't.
Right. Right. Did he ever speak about his upcoming, forthcoming death? Did he foresee it in any way?
No, but he did leave instructions about what was to happen. He was very keen because he was a Buddhist, and there's a Buddhist tradition, or I don't know what the exact word is, that when somebody dies, you touch their head or pull their hair. And he had told me that when he died, or if he died before me, I was to do this. And he told me about three times, and I said, don't be ridiculous, I'm going to die before you. But he said it quite a few times.
That's amazing, isn't it? And he's left such a beautiful legacy and helped tens of thousands of people all over the world and continues to do so.
It is a wonderful thing that he did.
It really, really is an absolutely beautiful, beautiful legacy to leave behind for the world, for everybody to benefit from his foundation and to take the work forward. Where do you see it going in the future, Susan?
Just continuing to grow. Maybe John's children might take over doing part of the admin and things that I and Jules, my daughter, John's sister, do. John had asked Jules to take over Death Cafe if anything happened to him. And she now, since John's death, has changed her career path completely. She was working in a sort of marketing office-based job, having done a marketing degree, and has gone back to university to study medicine. I think she decided to make the most of her finite life after John died, which has been brilliant for her.
How absolutely wonderful. And how are you making the most of your finite life, Susan?
Well, I'm still working. I work as a psychotherapist. I have started piano lessons again.
Wow, that's brilliant.
But I stopped when I was about 15 and decided I so love it. I sing in a choir. Yeah. I have a nice life. I'm going on holiday on Friday.
Where are you going? Where are you heading off to?
Madeira.
Oh, how wonderful.
I haven't ever been before. Have you been?
I did go to Madeira and I had a beautiful holiday there. It's a lovely island. Yeah, you'll have a wonderful, wonderful time. I wish you very well there on your holiday. Just before we finish then, tell us, if somebody's listening to this podcast and they're thinking, gosh, you know, I would love to host a death cafe, because people could, I'm imagining, could just hold one or two. They don't have to commit. Do they have to commit to a year's worth or anything?
Nothing like that. There is a whole section on how to host a death cafe on the Death Cafe website that will help you, and you can always email Jules or email me and we will help you. We'll talk to you about it if we can. Very happy to help people.
Because you can, I've had a look on the website, you can download a short guide to, yeah, how to host.
Yes, you can.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic. I just think it's one of the most beautiful things that I've heard about. And I heard about John Underwood many, many years ago. He was part of a documentary I did years ago with another theatre company. And I met your son. He was gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous, a beautiful, noble, generous, kind-hearted man, and passionate about talking and bringing to life the subject of death, actually. Yeah.
Yes, it's very inspiring when you watch the YouTube videos of him.
I have some pre-recorded audio of my interview many years ago with John Underwood, Susan's son, who talks passionately about his work with the Death Cafe, and Susan has very kindly given me permission to include some of his words from that interview here so that you can all benefit from his inspiration too. In his own words, here is John Underwood, founder of the Death Cafe.
I think we chose not to think about death and dying. So it wasn't a conscious choice, but, you know, death has become increasingly behind closed doors, and we've given over a lot of responsibility to professionals. Like, people used to die in the home, and people used to sort of have their dead people in the house with them. And, you know, mortality, infant mortality was higher. So death was more a part of life, but over the past sort of 50 years, we've given more to the funeral directors, and now more and more people die in hospital. So there was a kind of conscious choice and a sort of disempowerment of people, and people gave death away to a certain extent. And now I think people are taking it back and think really the generation that's driving that change, the baby boomers, throughout their time, they've changed things, they've demanded the best of everything, they've not settled for second best, you know, the most individualistic generation the world's ever produced, and they're not settling for second best in terms of their care as they get old, and the way they die, and the way their funeral happens. So, you know, there's now a rush to kind of take that ownership back. And I think there's growing recognition that death is special, is important. Death is, for want of a better word, sacred to people. And I think there's a growing recognition of that and a demand for improvement. And, you know, I'm really happy to sort of facilitate that. Obviously, I think there's a lot of benefits from reflecting on death and integrating awareness of death into one's daily life. I think it's really, personally, I think it's crucial at this time that we as a society, as a planet, do that a bit more.
What is the Death Cafe for people that are listening who don't know what it is?
Okay, well, it's an idea that comes from continental Europe, and there's a tradition of meeting in public places to talk about stuff. And so there's a Café Philo, which is a philosophical café, and a Café Scientifique, which is obviously a scientific café, and both of those have spread around the world and people do them quite regularly. But there was a guy in Switzerland, a Swiss sociologist called Bernard Cretaz, and he came up with the idea of a café mortel. And that was a space where people would gather together to talk about death and dying. And he did these for a number of years in Switzerland. And then he did the first one in Paris. And there was a small piece in the Independent newspaper around November 2010. And I read it and I was kind of electrified with excitement. I'd already wanted to do some work around death, and specifically something about talking about death. And as soon as I saw it, I knew that was what I wanted to do. So I committed to doing a death cafe myself. And it took me a long time to actually get round to doing it. I spoke to a local cafe kind of sheepishly and said I wanted to do a death cafe there. And they looked at me kind of confused and maybe a little bit concerned. I was knocked back by that. But then someone mentioned pop-up cafes, which is something that happens more and more. People taking a space which isn't sort of dedicated for serving food and drink and using it for that. And they suggested that I did that with Death Cafe. And I thought that's perfect. So I did the first Death Cafe here in my house in the basement. And it took me almost a year to get from reading the article to doing that. And so at the Death Cafe, people just come together and talk about death and dying in a safe and comfortable environment. And we've got kind of four guiding principles. So for us, the Death Cafe is a conversation about death, and it's not done for profit. We're not trying to make money out of it. We're a very open space, and so we're committed to not leading people to any sort of product or particular conclusion or particular course of action. So some people will say, oh, you should fill in a will or make your funeral plan. And we don't do that. We start where people are at and we just let people talk about where they're at and say what they want and just dedicate some time to exploring that subject. So our third principle is that we're always respectful to everybody's views. You know, we don't mind if you're Christian or agnostic or atheist. Everyone is welcome as long as they don't force their views on other people. We've got a strong aversion to proselytizing and we won't tolerate that. And our fourth principle is that there's always tea and cake. And so people come together in that space. We have a facilitator and generally we'll sort of explain what Death Cafe is, explain these principles, talk about Bernard Cretaz and sort of where it came from. And then we'll go around the table and people will say about what brought them to Death Cafe, where they're at. And some people will talk about people they've lost, or some people will talk about their own attitude to death and dying, or some people will say, the variation is incredible. But after that, for us, it's a very group-directed session and we'll just let people talk and that's it. And what has motivated me and other people to continue doing them is the quality of the dialogue. I mean, English people in particular are quite reserved and, you know, shy. But when death is talked about, that kind of mask tends to slip away. And as Bernard Cretaz put it, people are born in authenticity. So they say the most beautiful and moving things, things that I personally feel sort of privileged to be in the presence of. And so it's that quality of dialogue and the feeling that people get a lot from it. And some people might consider it quite a morbid activity or that it's quite heavy. It's not. The dialogue is really fun, lively. There's a lot of laughter and generally has the feeling of a family gathering where everyone's relaxed and they're just telling stories and people just tell it as it is. And it's just wonderful. For me personally, thinking about death is important. So it's important for me in that recognizing that my life is finite makes me value it more. I mean, it's the law of the market, really. You know, if there's less gold, then the price of gold goes up. So the same as it is with life. So as I was telling you, I've got two small kids. And so I'm aware when I spend time with them that I don't know how long we've got together. Definitely that time will come when we're parted. And so, but right now we're here together, and that makes me sort of try harder. When I hold their hand, I feel their hand and try and cherish that. And the same when I read them a story at night, I try to cherish that. So for me, helps me make the most of my life and helps me sort of prioritize what's important. But I'm also motivated by trying to bring about social change. I think thinking about death has a lot to offer us as a society. I think we live in a very unsustainable way. Our economic system is unsustainable. There's a lot of inequality in the world. We're facing massive environmental challenges. And, you know, I truly believe that thinking about death can give us the resilience to approach some of these challenges positively and begin to live in a different and more sustainable way. There's a worry that sometimes people express that by kind of talking about death, you're opening Pandora's box, and what's going to happen? Are people going to get really upset? Are people going to start freaking out? Is someone actually going to keel over and die from a heart attack because of the stress and strain of talking about it? But no, I think that's kind of death denial in action. And I think that's an indication of the barriers that society places to actually talking about death. So, I mean, the name Death Cafe is fairly in your face. So, you know, when people come along to a Death Cafe, they kind of know what they're going to get. You know, it's kind of quite filtering in that sense. But the people who come, they've got a lot to say naturally. I think probably everyone thinks about death to a certain degree. In our society, we don't have the time, we don't create the space for people to talk to each other about it. I think society's got a lot to learn from engaging more positively with death, but we're not kind of forcing that on anyone. So, you know, I don't even believe that necessarily Death Cafe is the right thing for everyone. I'm not saying everyone should go. It's just we will make it available for those people who want it, and it's a group directed session. The facilitation's very light, so really the facilitator, a lot of it is about creating a safe space. So we try and have a nice environment. You know, we'll have candles or maybe some light music, or, you know, it'll kind of smell nice and be tidy and all that kind of thing. And then you've got the food and drink. So sometimes we'll produce a menu and we'll have, you know, nice coffee and homemade cakes and whatnot. And it's quite interesting because any caterer will tell you that people eat a lot more at a funeral than at a wedding. So that's about creating safety. And then you've got a facilitator who's someone who's skilled at leading groups and also is comfortable to talk about death and dying and comfortable being open to people's different perspectives. And then we just allow people to talk. So mainly the exchange is directed for them. So we create this safe container and our principals help with that as well. And then it's just about allowing people to have the discussion that they want to have there and then. I interact with lots of people around this subject matter and talk about death all day long and never get bored of it. But I mean, I just feel that it's life enhancing stuff. I feel that it's part of my personal journey, and I think I'm not afraid of death in the same way. When I'm still afraid of death, I'm afraid of dying, and of course my worst fears are deaths of my children or death of my wife or, you know, someone close or something horrific like that happening, and I still have that fear hasn't gone away. And, you know, when I visualize myself sitting on my deathbed, you know, the moment's finally come, this is it, there's a feeling of fear, and you know, that's always been there. But I mean, previously there's more of a panic, like I couldn't even necessarily bear to think about those things. I just kind of shut it away. But now it's not like that, and I feel like I could cope with it all. And even with my own death, there's a sense of looking forward to it sometimes. Not in a sense like I want life to end. I don't. I want to live as long as possible. But, you know, the moment of death, like people say, it's a great adventure. Who knows what's on the other side? And I've experienced death myself. I've been there when someone's died and I've done hospice visiting. And I think death can be so potent, such a moment of discovery and healing and transformation, and, you know, and very beautiful. And so there's part of me which recognizes that about it and doesn't dread it in perhaps the way that I might have a decade ago.
Some wonderful words there by John Underwood.
Susan, thank you so much for coming and explaining the workings of a death cafe, how it works. I very much hope that people that are listening will be very inspired to discuss death and dying, because it is such a part of life. It's such a part of everyday life, especially I'm finding as I get older and we're losing friends and people are getting sick with these terminal illnesses and all the rest of it. It's lovely to know that there is a space that we can go to where we can be given a space to talk about these things that are so important to us, to help us to come to terms with what is happening to those that we love, and to help us to live the best life possible, which is what John wanted us to do, is it not?
And what he did.
And well done you, Susan, for continuing his work so bravely and so passionately as well. It's fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us today, Susan.
Thank you.
I really hope you enjoyed that episode with Susan Barsky-Reed and her beautiful and inspiring son, John Underwood, whose foundational work with the Death Cafe continues in the world today, bringing huge comfort to many thousands of people across the world and assisting us all in being courageous, in knowing it's okay to discuss feelings and experience our emotions around death and dying, however they may manifest for us. I'll be back next week with another fascinating episode for you, which I know already that you're going to absolutely love. Meanwhile, if you want to have a look at some of the courses I'm teaching, please do go to my website, anteato.com, and take a look under events. I'm currently fascinated with the psychic mind and the way that we can pick up information from the matrix. I love the fact that every day science is now proving more and more what we have all known for ages, that time is not fixed and that possibilities are boundless and infinite, and therefore so are we. If you would like to learn with me, I'm teaching a fascinating 6-month mentorship program in remote viewing, using our psychic mind to explore the infinite universe. It would be lovely to see you in class, and details are on my website under events. As usual, show notes are available for this podcast episode on my website too, under podcasts, including a full transcription. Don't forget to like and subscribe, as they say, and I'll be back next week. Have a wonderful couple of weeks, everyone. And don't forget also to investigate the possibility of hiring a cafe near you or hosting on Zoom, with tea and cake, of course, your very own Death Cafe. My name is Anne Teato, and thank you for listening to Psychic Matters.